We depend on the summer people here for our very lives.
You are not going to have a summer unless you deal
with this problem.
We gotta
You are familiar with our problems.
I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass.
The mayor from Jaws has become a meme in this time of coronavirus, but there is a harsh truth behind that exchange. The unrealistic hope that the demon has been vanquished and business can get back to normal, especially on Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of a summer season that so many depend on for tourism dollars. San Diego, Kern, Ventura, and Santa Barbara counties are reopening their economies now. And beginning today, Big Bear Lake is allowing restaurants and other businesses to reopen in defiance of state orders. With me now to talk about that decision is Frank Rush, city manager at the city of Big Bear Lake. Hi.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Well, tell me about this decision to allow businesses to reopen.
Yeah, so I just need to correct your characterization of it. We are not defying the governor. We have not reopened the community. We have simply indicated that we are no longer communicating or enforcing the governor's restrictions. So, you know, I think that's an important distinction to make. Having said
that,
isn't that in de facto defiance?
I mean, you're not enforcing the state order.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, certainly people can characterize it however they would like, but our official statement says that we're just no longer communicating or enforcing. And, you know, we put out a pretty lengthy statement yesterday after a special city council meeting. You know, essentially, here in Big Bear Lake, we have been relatively fortunate, and I would add much more fortunate and much less impacted than all of the counties that you just mentioned that mm-hmm. are reopening this weekend. So, you know, we essentially got to a point where, you know, we just simply can't communicate and enforce those orders. We have put out a lot of guidance. We've come up with a very responsible plan for our community that we are recommending people heed and follow. I mean, the reality of it is there's probably not much of a safer place in California than Big Bear Lake right now, and probably in many other parts of the country.
And how many cases, confirmed cases, do you have there?
Yeah, so in the Big Bear Valley, which we're probably as large as many counties in the United States anyway, we just happen to be part of San Bernardino, which is a very the largest county in the country. We have 9 cases confirmed, and I know that most of those have already recovered. Fortunately, we have no deaths. There's plenty of hospital capacity, both locally and regionally. There's plenty of ventilator capacity. There's plenty of testing. Contact tracing's been done for all the cases up here in the Big Bear Valley. And so, you know, we've been fortunate. And, you know, it's been 10 weeks now that our businesses have been essentially shut down. And, you know, folks are really suffering a lot of economic and social harm. And mm-hmm. that led to our position that the council adopted yesterday,
which is basically to allow businesses to reopen if they want to.
Our statement is that we are just not communicating or enforcing the governor's orders. We have basically trusted our businesses, our residents, our visitors to do the right thing. We've asked them to make decisions based on their personal circumstances, to be responsible. We certainly want people to maintain physical distance. We want them to wear face coverings. We want them to practice good hygiene. Like I said, the city, we've had a plan that we developed with a tremendous amount of community input. We started that about 4 weeks ago. I think we had 5 public meetings on it. Was reviewed a couple times by the council. Ultimately adopted on May 11th, and then we sent it to the governor on May 13th, and we have not received a response.
And from what you understand, how many of the businesses there will reopen this weekend?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, like I said, we're basically trusting them to make wise and safe decisions for their employees and their patrons and our community. Certainly there will be some. You know, there certainly have been many folks who have been ignoring the governor's orders anyway, and I suspect that's happening in many parts of the state. And so, you know, we just eventually evolved to this position. We would absolutely, like I said, we have a great plan for our community, a very responsible plan that is widely supported in our community. If the governor approves that plan, we will absolutely enforce that. But, in the absence of that, there's really nothing else for us to do. We just simply can't communicate and enforce the governor's orders.
And is that because you just can't survive economically if you stay closed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been 10 weeks now. I mean, the pain and the harm is very, very real. I mean, we have businesses that are hanging on by a thread. We have businesses that won't survive this, unfortunately. We have people whose lives are ruined. And meanwhile, the actions that they're taking are the same things going on in Ventura County this weekend, or the same things going on in San Diego County. But we don't have that approval yet. We have 9 cases. I think there's about 700 cases in Ventura County. I think about 30 people died. That's terrible. You know, in our case, we have 9 cases, all except I'm aware of one who has not fully recovered yet. I'm not sure about a couple of others, but no deaths, no one in the hospital. In San Bernardino County, there are plenty of hospital beds, plenty of ICU beds, plenty of ventilators. And if you go back to the start of this COVID-19 event, the stated goals were, number one, slow the spread. Number two, don't overwhelm the healthcare system. To the governor's credit, I think we've accomplished that.
The larger county has not. San Bernardino has not met those standards. I guess I'm wondering, are you afraid, though, let me just ask, because we just have a few seconds left. Are you afraid, though, that this is a big holiday weekend, and as you say, you've only had 9 cases, 0 deaths, that a bunch of visitors are going to come into your area and possibly bring the disease with them?
Yeah, I think the reality is we've had a lot of visitors over the last few weeks. We've had a lot of day trippers. There are a lot of folks who have been going up and enjoying the wilderness. And I think that's happening all over the county. But I want to go back to one of the comments you made about San Bernardino County. You know, they may not meet some of the criteria. I think they do now, but they may not meet some of the criteria, but there's no one in the hospitals. There are plenty of ventilators. There's plenty of hospital beds. You can go on any public website and you can look at the data yourself. The capacity is there. So, and that's especially true here in the Big Bear Valley, but yet it's been 10 weeks of suffering. And, you know, we just got to the point where we've just got to make a change.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate your time.
You are welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Frank Rush, City Manager of Big Bear Lake. It's not just Big Bear. Joshua Tree is open, beaches, state parks. So how will park officials monitor to make sure those places aren't overcrowded and that physical distancing can be maintained? Gloria Sandoval is a spokeswoman with California State Parks, and she joins me now. Hi.
Hello.
Well, what is open and what's not? Are all state parks open?
No, that's very important for all Californians to know, that parks have not fully reopened. There are some that are completely closed, 31, and the remaining park units either have parking limitations or have some restrictions for the public. So it's very important for Californians to understand that they need to plan ahead, plan properly for their outings, visit the website of that individual local outdoor destination that they plan on going to prior to leaving home to find out if the park is open, if there's parking, and to view the new visitor guidelines.
So the parking has been curtailed somewhat, right? It's not open parking anymore?
We've increased access at a number of park units across the state by providing limited parking at some parking lots. That means that a parking lot that would, you know, have, for example, 100 cars, at this point, only 50% of that parking lot will be available for the public.
Okay, so you want to limit the amount of people at these parks by limiting the parking. However, couldn't people just park on the side of the road or in neighborhoods near a beach and go anyway?
Well, we have to be really careful. As people start venturing into the outdoors, we want them to stay local. If at all possible, we want them to walk or bike into parks because we really want everybody to protect all of California's communities.
Do you have any idea how many people might come this weekend to the state parks that are open?
We don't, but what we do know is that Memorial Day weekend and 4th of July are two of our most busiest holiday weekends in the year. So we do expect people to go outdoors. But again, we really strongly encourage them to plan ahead, find out what's open. And once they get to the park, if they do get to the park and they see too many people where they're not going to be able to practice that safe physical distance from others, we're asking them to come back at another time.
And do they have to wear masks at all times when they're out there?
It really depends. We have statewide, we have 280 state park units across the state of California. We are the nation's largest state park system. So it really depends on what park they're going to and what county the park is in, because we really want to make sure that everybody follows the local public health ordinances that are in place. But even saying that, it's important that people to understand that for a long time, we're not going to go back to normal. Visitors should expect a different state park experience than they're used to. So that's why it's very important for the visitors to, again, prior to leaving home, go on our website, check out the individual local outdoor destination webpage to find out what is open, what guidelines are in place, and then if there's any limited parking. And then also, the public should know, be prepared. Not all restrooms are open to the public. So please bring soap and sanitizer, and remember to always pack out all trash. We need everybody to help us take care of our parks.
What about camping? Any campgrounds open or no?
No, at this time, the campgrounds still remain closed to prevent overcrowding. And in addition to that, it's also the visitor centers, and then all guided tours also, we're not holding those at this time.
And will rangers be enforcing any of these guidelines? Like, what if they see a big group of people crowding together, not wearing masks or doing something else that's forbidden? What would happen?
So even though our state park peace officers are rangers and lifeguards and allied law enforcement entities, they do have the authority to issue citations. The expectation is that the public will adhere to the advice of the public health officials and practice that physical distancing and not bring that equipment that we're asking visitors at this time not to bring with them. But, you know, if the situation, is severe enough, then yes, we have issued citations and we will issue citations.
Gloria Sandoval with the California State Parks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the exploding coronavirus problem in Mexico and in Brazil, whose president there refuses to endorse social distancing, calling COVID the little flu. That's next on Press Play. This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Brazil now has the third largest outbreak of coronavirus in the world, behind only the U.S. and Russia. The crisis in South America's largest nation has been downplayed and mismanaged. The situation in Mexico is similar. 6,500 people are dead there. And there are accusations that the government in Mexico may be intentionally undercounting the number of coronavirus victims. Alex Ward joins me now. He's been covering both of these countries' COVID-19 responses for Vox. Welcome back.
Happy to be here.
Well, first, let's talk about Mexico. What's happening there?
So Mexico was very, very slow to start with its coronavirus response, in part because of the president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, prioritized economic benefits of keeping the economy open as opposed to locking down and trying to deal with the disease. This led to a spread throughout the country. And
introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
The problem is, it seems like Mexican officials are really unable to actually count the amount of people who have the disease because they lack testing equipment and, frankly, an infrastructure to track it. And so they are open about guessing, really, how many people in Mexico have been infected with the coronavirus, and many people believe that the numbers are much, much higher.
What is the unofficial estimate for how many people have it and how many people have died?
Well, currently, I mean, if you listen to the official numbers, it's around 6,500, 6,600, but the unofficial numbers are hard to guess. I mean, you have some people claiming that Mexico City itself, the death toll is about three times higher. You've had some estimates say weeks ago that the death toll may be in the 600,000s to 700,000s. So it's possible that it's much higher than that now. And frankly, we're basing this all on anecdotes to a certain extent and just in estimates. But when you hear the stories from funeral directors and cremators, they're basically saying that they have quintupled the amount of people they've had to bury or incinerate in recent days.
Well, that's pretty grim that this information is coming from crematoria, that they can't keep up with the amount of dead bodies. And so there's some question as to whether this is intentional or not, this undercounting.
Right. So you have the Mexican officials basically say, look, our model is whatever we kind of get, whatever the numbers we're getting, we're just going to multiply that by eight. And that's kind of what they've gone with. That said, you've had mayors from town say, we have reported, you know, let's say 100 deaths in our town. And when their town shows up in an official government document, that number has been lowered. And so the government says that the reason for that is, well, that's how it fits in their model, where others claim, no, actually, that's just the government trying to purposefully lower the death toll. So there are people out there insinuating, and these are Mexican health experts and others, saying it is very likely that the federal government of Mexico is purposefully undercounting the amount of deaths of the coronavirus.
Well, meanwhile, can the health system even handle the sick in Mexico?
No, it's woefully understaffed and underfunded. Part of that has to do with the president's own reforms. He believes that the government should not be rich while so many people in Mexico are suffering economically. And so he cut a lot of funding and resources to the health sector. And that's made it extremely hard for the government to respond. I mean, some of the best hospitals, even in the capital, Mexico City, are struggling with an inundation of patients. So The expectation is that Mexico may be one of the worst possibly hit countries in the world and with no sign of slowing down at the moment.
And the border has been closed between Mexico and the United States, but still, that's got to be worrisome for American health officials that just to our south, there is an unchecked crisis going on. Not that we're doing that much better here, but still, there could be lots of cases, lots of people undetected who have coronavirus who might eventually come across the border here.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal had an interesting piece along these lines. Basically, Tijuana is one of the worst hit cities that we know of in Mexico, and some people do come into the United States south of San Diego for work or seeking medical attention. And the numbers there, according to the Wall Street Journal, have started to rise. This is not necessarily like an illegal immigration thing. This is just people coming to get help for their medical ills. And so this is part of the issue that some people have, that if the U.S. is bad and Mexico is bad, and there are naturally families that want to come, you know, through the border, even though it's somewhat closed, that could make the responses in both nations much harder.
Okay, that's Mexico. Let's talk about Brazil. How many people there have the virus? What's the estimate there?
Well, right now, it's about 20,000 plus deaths, over 300,000 confirmed cases. This makes Brazil, if not the second worst hit country, soon to be the second worst hit country. And it makes perfect sense, sadly. It is a country with massive cities. It is a country that receives a lot of tourism early on, a lot of travel. And it has a president, Jair Bolsonaro, who has minimized the coronavirus from the absolute beginning and in many people's minds is out-trumping Trump in the country's response.
He has said things like, well, we'll all die one day. And he's basically calling on citizens to go back to work, to go out, basically contradicting state governors and public health experts in Brazil. Is he still standing by that, saying that this is just, as he called it, a little flu?
Absolutely. In fact, very recently, he was out protesting alongside, you know, anti-lockdown demonstrators. I mean, Bolsonaro is open about the fact that he does not want the country's economy to slow down, that he believes this is all overblown. He's fired two health ministers basically for opposing him, and more specifically saying that hydroxychloroquine, the drug that has become a phenomenon around the world because some believe it is helping with coronavirus responses and treatment, those health ministers wouldn't boost it like Bolsonaro was, and he ousted them for it. And now the country's actually having trouble recruiting a new health minister because they don't want to be put in such a position. But Bolsonaro's out there with supporters, anti-lockdown demonstrators, quite literally, you know, celebrating with them, doing push-ups with men in military garb in close quarters as a way to say how strong he is, but also that he's not so worried about a crisis that is absolutely decimating his nation.
Alex Ward from Vox, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, film reviews, including a rom-com action flick starring Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani.
And after like 3 minutes of watching Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae, I would die for them. I would throw myself in front of traffic if it meant that these two characters would stay together.
That's next on Press Play. This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It's Friday, so let's find out which new streaming movies you should see and which you should skip this weekend. Joining me now is William Bibbiani, film critic and co-host of the podcasts Canceled Too Soon and the critically acclaimed Network. Welcome back.
Hello.
And Travella Anderson, film critic and host of the podcast Fantai. Welcome back to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Well, let's begin with The Lovebirds. This is a new murder mystery romance action, etc., starring Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani. It was supposed to premiere at South by, but that was canceled, obviously. Now it's coming out on Netflix. Here's a trailer.
I love you.
Police officer, he's a criminal.
Move.
I don't think he's a cop.
We just need to find the guy the police are looking for.
Do you suggest we actually go out there and solve a
murder?
All we need is a name, and then we're in the clear.
All right, Travelle, what is happening here? Those two are a couple, I guess, and then they are accused murderers. How did that happen?
So what happens is that they are a couple. They're going through this really, I would say, defining moment in their relationship when they witness slash are accessories to a murder. And so the rest of the movie is them trying to, you know, find enough evidence to try to clear their names from the, you know, supposed police who are looking for them. It sounds perhaps kind of like blasé in terms of like the type of movie you might want to watch, but I really, really enjoyed kind of the connection and the chemistry between Issa and Kumail, as well as just like, you know, having something just real easy and fun at this particular moment.
Is it funny?
I thought it was funny. I think Issa Rae has a particular style of comedy from Insecure, if anybody's familiar with that, as well as, mm-hmm. you know, Stella McGee's The Photograph earlier this year. So it's that particular style of delivery that she's known for. And then you have Kumail there as well for fans of The Big Sick. So I found it funny because I'm fans of their styles individually, but it could be something that falls flat for some people. I can definitely see that.
Bibbs, what did you think?
I laughed my hindquarters off while watching this film. The premise has been done before. It's a plot of movies like Date Night or whatever, but Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae are absolutely perfect together. This is from director Michael Showalter, who directed The Big Sick, and I think he's one of the best filmmakers we have right now when it comes to dramatizing and also making entertaining romantic relationships. And he wisely starts the movie with just this short prologue that's just the two of them deeply in love. And after like 3 minutes of watching Kumail Nanjiani and Issa Rae, I would die for them. I would throw myself in front of traffic if it meant that these two characters would stay together. They are 100% funny. I really, 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 really loved this movie, and in particular, I loved them in it.
Another interesting thing, I was reading an interview with Kumail, and he was saying that this movie was originally written for a white couple, but because they are on the lam, if you will, they have to clear their name, and so they're being chased by cops. It's an interesting and a different dynamic when this couple is now a couple of color, that, and their relationship with the police would be different.
Very much so. I would just say, you know, you've got Issa Rae, who is a beautiful, dark-skinned black woman. You have Kumail, who is from Pakistan. You know, it's obvious that this is a type of movie. I think you can look at it and say, oh, this was written for white people. But to put people of color in it and also inject the story in the script with very specific, you know, POC references, I think that's what, you know, helps elevate the story into something that, you know, we really haven't seen in this particular way.
Okay, so that's Lovebirds. Next up, Blood Machines. This is out on Shudder, which is a horror, thriller, and supernatural streaming service. And Bibbs, you saw this one. I'm going to need you to set it up before we hear a clip because it's very weird.
It's exceptionally weird. However, it's pretty darn cool. This is a sequel to a music video called Turbo Killer, and it takes place in a future in which mankind has become increasingly dependent on machines, but machines have started to develop souls, and perhaps they've started to rebel against humanity. But this is not in like a Star Wars kind of way where there's this army of droids just marching around a battlefield. This is in an incredibly spiritual way, and it is fascinating and odd.
Okay, here's a clip.
I've never seen so many wrecks. Maybe they had souls too.
Pull yourself together, Lago. My patience is wearing thin. Bring us back the Mima, or you and Lago will be in big trouble.
I love the new wave music kicking in there. But you did say that this is a sequel to a music video. What?
Yeah, so there was a music video a few years ago called Turbo Killer, which was a very expressionistic and unusual sci-fi story about the soul of a machine being rescued by a mysterious person, which led to a Lamborghini car chase in space, which that's different. And when you're thinking about something like Blood Machines, I think it's important to remember that as filmmakers and as film fans, one of the things that we are constantly searching for is new imagery, is new things to put on screen, is new ideas. And that's why something like Blood Machines is especially valuable. This new film, which is about 50 minutes long, and it has been, for some reason, cut into three parts on Shudder. They're all available right now. You can watch it as a single film, but if you wanted to watch it piecemeal, you could. It is the kind of spacefaring sci-fi story that we're just not getting in Hollywood, because Hollywood is following the same two formulas over and over again. They're trying to do something similar to Star Wars, or they're trying to do something similar to Star Trek whenever they tell a story in space. What something like Blood Machines, which is written and directed by Seth Eagerman, this is the idea that science and science fiction and our future could be completely inexplicable and unpredictable. And it marries ideas that we've seen from pulp fiction like Star Wars. It marries ideas from religious cinema. It marries ideas from like electronica music videos into something that is very distinctive and new. This is a time when I think that we should be getting all these spectacle movies right now. We should be getting all these giant blockbusters, and they've just all moved away. If you are starved for that kind of content and you're willing to go a little outside the box, I think Blood Machines is one of the most exciting motion pictures I've seen all year.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So that's a full-throated endorsement.
Yeah, and it's a really, really great service, and they do have some stuff outside of it. Blood Machines has some horror elements. It's a little violent. It does have some nudity in it, so it's not, like, for kids, but they also have some sci-fi stuff on there as well. And if you're a genre film enthusiast, I'm a fan of that service, and I don't say that lightly.
All right. Well, speaking of kids, time to throw the kids a bone. You know what I'm going to talk about? Scoob! Exclamation point. This is the movie we never thought we needed, the origin story for Scooby-Doo and Shaggy. Here's some from the trailer.
Hey! This mangy stray's coming with me.
He's not a stray.
Okay, then. What's his name?
His name's Scooby.
Middle name?
Doobie?
Last name?
Doo.
I'm Fred. This is Velma.
Hi.
And that's Daphne.
Hey.
I'm Shaggy. And this is Scooby-Doo.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, Travel, tell us about this one. Is this a thumbs up, thumbs down?
This is a thumb sideways for me, actually, okay? So we're basically it's a reboot of the classic Scooby-Doo franchise, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of cross-pollinate this world and create like a Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe, if you will. So they're introducing some of these other classic characters that you might be familiar with, like Dick Dastardly, like Muttley, into this story and kind of, you know, shaking it all up in a bag. And so you get a little bit of the origin story of Scooby and Shaggy, but then you find out that they basically have to figure out why Scooby and Shaggy have been abducted and why, you know, this villain is trying to get Scooby in particular to help him do some, you know, dirty things, if you will. It's really interesting because I wanted to like it. I really did. But it just does not go there for me. And I don't know why.
Well, I'm sure there are lots of reasons why. Bibbs?
Yeah, I have a theory why. You know, sometimes when you're watching a movie, you get the impression that someone like really wanted to tell this story, that they were really, really passionate about it. I never got that impression from Scoob, which you have to say that way because of the exclamation point. The problem with Scoob is that it feels incredibly like contrived, like it only exists just to reintroduce these characters to a large audience, which they assumed they'd get because it was a larger release than the typical Scoob type shows and movies that they've been making for the last few decades, which mostly gone straight to video. But it just feels false. You know, everything in the movie doesn't feel designed for the characters, doesn't feel designed to tell an interesting story. It feels designed to just make sure kids know who Blue Falcon is, because kids don't know who Blue Falcon is. Kids don't know who Captain Caveman is. These are mostly characters who are from not even their parents' generation, but from their grandparents' generation. Scooby-Doo has thrived and stayed alive and is still relevant, but they're just trying to use Scooby-Doo as a delivery system for all these other characters, which do not have the same thriving pop culture cachet that the studio can exploit unless they put them in this movie. So the whole movie is just there to put these other characters in it, and it's not telling a good Scooby-Doo story. It's not telling a good story about Shaggy and Scooby. It's not even telling a particularly good Blue Falcon story. Mm-hmm. It's just an advertisement for future stuff they'd like to do, and it's not particularly funny or entertaining in itself.
Burning question. Is Scrappy in this movie? And what is his origin story?
Scrappy was birthed from the mouth of hell, but he is not in this movie. Just so we're clear, nobody wants Scrappy anything. Scrappy was the bane of many a child's existence, mine included.
Okay. Well, silver lining, no Scrappy in this movie. Okay, so if parents want to watch a movie with their kids or little kids, is there anything else that they can watch besides this?
I actually think this would be really good. I think kids, like little kids, will actually enjoy it. It's got this enduring story about like the power of friendship in it. I think the adults might have a feigned ability to look at some sort of like, you know, nostalgia, but like nostalgia light is what I've been calling it. But yeah, it's not really for the adults, but I think kids will actually enjoy it.
I'm going to second that right here, because, well, I will say that Scoob isn't particularly good or well-made. It's also not, like, bad for kids. And I think it only kind of pops out right now because there isn't a lot of competition. But there is other good stuff on streaming that came out earlier this year. You don't even have to pay extra for it. The Willoughbys is a really fun, kooky, Addams Family-esque animated movie that's on Netflix right now. I recommend that. Shaun the Sheep in Farmageddon is out this year. And that's a very, very funny stop-motion animated movie that I think kids of all ages can appreciate. There is other genuinely good stuff out there. But if you just want to keep the kids distracted so that you can like do some gardening or get some reading done, Scoob isn't the worst thing you could show them.
I think your favorite part of this entire episode is saying it that way, right?
What, Scoob?
Scoob.
Yeah, it's my favorite part of the whole movie is the exclamation point.
Yeah, I think you're really enjoying yourself with that.
the best thing they did.
All right. Well, thank you both for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
William Bibbiani, film critic and co-host of the podcasts Canceled Too Soon and the critically acclaimed Network, and Travell Anderson, film critic and host of the podcast Fantai. Coming up, we're going to meet comedian Dion Cole, star of Black-ish, next on Press Play. This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Comedian Dion Cole, best known for his role on ABC's hit comedy Black-ish and its spinoff Grown-ish on Freeform. In both shows, he plays Charlie Telfy, who often helps explain the complexities of being Black to his white coworkers.
Denzel Washington is one of the best actors that we ever had. And in Glory, he was only able to drum up one tear. Now, if my calculations serve me correctly, he should be able to do a second tier in 2033.
So if you can't cry, how do Black men deal with their problems?
Black men deal with their problems one of two ways. Fight or flight. Mascot in your face? Fight. God does magic in the hood around you and a bunch of Black guys, and you don't understand what he's doing. Probably think he's in a cult or something. Flight.
He's also in a comedy special, has a new one out on Netflix. It's called Cole Hearted.
People be on social media, they be kicking, and women be all up in Cabo, chilling on boats and yachts and wearing Chanel's and bodies glistening, everybody abs is tight, and men popping champagne and got watches and jewels all in the camera. And you at work at your cubicle looking at.
And if you haven't seen Black-ish or that comedy special, you have probably seen him in these campy Old Spice commercials, you know, where he fights for men's rights.
All I wanted was to use your body wash.
And all I wanted was to have a body wash. Men have skin, too.
It's empty.
I wonder why.
All right, joining us now, without that Old Spice music, is Dion Cole. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
The music was hilarious.
I know, that music is funny. I mean, it's campy on purpose, obviously. You are obviously a comedic actor, a comedian, and how did you start out in comedy?
A friend of mine, he was the one that kind of told me to do it. He was like, you should try stand-up. And I was like, nah, I ain't doing no stand-up. And he was like, I'll give you $50. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah. And I was like, well, let's go see. So we went to this comedy club in Chicago called All Jokes Aside. And we looked, and I kept looking at these comedians. And I was like, I got better stories than these guys. And I put some stories together, and they wouldn't let me go on stage for about 3 weeks. And then when they finally let me up, I got a standing ovation the first time. And I was never looked back.
Oh my gosh. Did you give the $50 back?
Yeah, I gave him exactly $50 too.
I guess that was money well spent. That's a pretty good investment.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was.
So talk a bit about your comedy special, because in that, I mean, Netflix comedy special, that's pretty much right. The goal for a lot of stand-up comedians that's kind of what you want to do, right? What did you think you were going to do when you found out you were going to have a Netflix special?
I did this thing with them called the stand-ups. They came to me and was like, hey, we're doing a thing on Netflix where we have six comedians all doing 30 minutes apiece. And I was like, I just did an hour on Comedy Central. I'm like, why would I go back to a half hour when I did an hour? And so I was like, no. Talked to my manager, they was like, man, you should put your product aside. Netflix is a whole nother monster, and the people that it reach is probably way bigger than Comedy Central. Did the 30-minute special, the whole thing went through the roof. They came back to me and was like, man, we're gonna give you an hour. And I was like, okay. And the people that it reach, not thinking Netflix got 100 million subscribers all around the world. For you to do 2 million views ain't nothing. With 100 million subscribers, that's like fantastic. So when it was time for me to do my special, I was like ready. I toured for like another 2 years and got it real tight and shot it, and man, the rest is history. But I'm so glad I put my pride aside. that's the whole, you know, lesson that I learned from it. Like, sometimes you got to get out of your own way in order to grow, progress.
It's interesting to me in that show, because there's obviously it's 90% comedy, but then 10% of it is you actually giving life advice to people. It's seriously, which I think is kind of interesting.
When you have a platform like that, you got to use it for more than just buffoonery. I mean, you're up there and you got millions of people watching you. I feel as though everybody don't have to be this way, but me personally, I need to say something in order to inspire someone, to have someone think. That's my goal, you know, when I'm doing stand-up, is to definitely try to spark the mind of someone that can change the world later.
Yeah. So one of the things you talk about is how women should just chill out when it comes to getting dressed up and doing their hair and their nails and all that sort of stuff. I guess now we've taken your advice. We're not doing that now. But
see,
I
see the future.
Yeah, you got what you asked for. So there you go. You're welcome.
Ponytails and sweats for days. That's what I love.
Were you just saying that, or is that true?
Give me a ponytail, some sweats, and I'm gonna be at you. I really mean that. Like, I'm not really big on the done up, because that's something you have to do in order to go out. But your everyday is what I would like to fall in love with.
Well, that's refreshing. I think that's nice to hear. Yeah. I think probably it's funny, because I think a lot of women, they do dress up for men, but they also dress up for each other. But it's a lot of pressure.
I think it's more women dress up for women more than men's a lot of times, I think. But don't get me wrong, there are some men that be putting these expectations on women in order for them to do this, do that, and get their nails done and get this done. And it's so shocking sometimes, because when you tell a woman, I don't pay attention to none of that, they almost take it as a diss, because they're so trained to have someone pay attention to that they take it as, what, you ain't, or you're not paying attention to me. And it's like, it don't have nothing to do with that. Your nails ain't gonna do nothing for this so-called relationship that we trying to get into. Nothing of the sort. That has nothing to do with who you are, you know? So me looking at your nails means I'm really not paying attention to you.
So you're in quarantine all by yourself?
Yeah.
What have you been doing?
Oh man, writing. I've been writing a couple movies. I have a couple TV shows in production that, you know, tightening up the screws on one of them. I just finished the script with them. And so we're going into the next phase, hopefully. And then also I've been also like DJing, something that I've always wanted to do and never had the time to do. And every Sunday on my Instagram Live, I play disco music. I'm from Chicago, so I'm a house head. And, you know, I don't like to say house so much, because people think, like, you know, that track, acid, bam, and that's not what I play. I play, like, disco, like, real good house, like, you know, like, Lalila Hathaway and, you know, Brenda Russell and, you know, Four Tops and just everybody, like Hell Melvin and the Blue Notes. Like, we go in like super disco, and we just get it in every Sunday at 11 a.m. West Coast time. And it take me a week to really prepare those lists. But what I did was I learned how to DJ in front of everybody. When I first started during the quarantine or whatever, people would be like, don't quit your day job, and leaving all kind of comments. Like, that was horrible and all that, but I just kept on doing it because I had the equipment. I bought the equipment like 3 years ago, just didn't have the time to practice. They was like, his blends is horrible, but man, that song he played was So that's how it's been. But I've been learning and gradually learning how to blend right in front of everybody's eyes. And the comments went from, don't quit your day job, to, oh my God, you're one of my favorite DJs now. So I wanted to do that to also show people, don't waste this time, man. While you're in quarantine, do not come out of quarantine without a new skill, without a new book you read, without new knowledge, without something. Don't use this time coming out going back to the same old, get something out of this. And so that's why I try to do what I did to inspire.
Well, are you trying to take on D-Nice?
Hell nah. Look, D-Nice is my guy. When D-Nice first started DJing, he inspired me and the world. Plus, we play totally different music. Even though D-Nice play everything, his music catalog is on another planet. You know, yeah. But I specifically play disco music, and that's it.
Give us a song we can play when we go out at the end of this interview.
Why, you gonna go get it?
We'll play it, yeah.
Get this song called Way Back When by Brenda Russell.
Okay. So, meanwhile, what about Black-ish and Grown-ish? What's happening with those shows while we're in quarantine?
Shout out to the cast of Grown-ish and Black-ish. That's my family forever. Grown-ish is thriving. They were supposed to come back soon, but because of all of this, they had to push it back. This season of Grown-ish, I might make an appearance, but I won't be a part of the show like I used to be because it's been 4 years and they graduate. And so they're not going to be at the school like they were. And I was the dean at the school. So I had a great run with them. It was supposed to go for a couple episodes in season one just to get the show on its feet and get it going. Like, it, you know, that's all I was there for, to get it going, you know. And then here we are 4 years later, I'm still on it. So, and Black-ish, we still rocking and rolling.
I guess the question, though, is, like, how do you come back? Have you been talking about that with your fellow cast members, with Kenya Barris, with anyone else? Like, how do you film it now?
Well, we have to wait. We just got to wait until the time is right. We wouldn't go back anyway until, like, the fall. Like, that's when we shoot all the time. Like, when we shoot Black, it's just almost like school. We go in the fall, and we're done in the spring. You know, so hopefully by the time this dies down, maybe we'll have some type of normal. It'll never be back to normal, but have some type of normalcy in the fall where we can shoot.
Well, in the meantime, people can watch you on the Netflix comedy special. And there's one particular joke that I want you to tell, if you could retell. And that's the Arby's joke.
Okay. Okay. That blew your mind or something?
It blew my producer's mind. She's begging for it. I'm just telling you.
It blew her mind. Yeah. No, it was just, I was sitting up with a friend and we were sitting up. The actual truth was we were in a gas station across the street from Arby's and we were so hungry. And I was like, I wonder what Arby's stand for. And then my boy was like, I don't know. And I was like, maybe it stand for roast beef. And he was like, maybe. And I was like, then I just started going on stage asking people. And everybody was like, I guess so. And then I was like, I'm just going to say this. So it was just a question that I always ask people, man. It just put out in the universe, man. It always made people think. I always try to have like a joke like that I have people think. I remember on my Comedy Central special, I asked people, I said, Adam and Eve, they're the very first people on the planet Earth, right? And everybody go, yeah. And then I go, well, why do they have navels? Like, who cut their umbilical? Who cut their umbilical cords? They should have no navels, right? If they the first. I always try to throw some type of joke.
Now I'm thinking about that. Now I'm really thinking
about that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. That was so much fun.
Oh, it's good, man. Thanks for having me, man. Stay safe, stay healthy, and congratulations on your platform.
Well, thanks. You too. And congratulations on being a DJ. That's really cool.
I DJ. Do I consider myself a DJ? Because I DJ? I don't know. I'm not getting paid to DJ. I'm not doing parties. I'm just DJing.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not around here like, yeah, DJ Coleslaw on the ones and twos. Like, no, I'm not good. DJ Coleslaw. I'm DJ Coleslaw because I was like just making fun of it at first, and then it became real. So,
okay, let's go out on one of your favorite songs, DJ Coleslaw, Way Back When.
Let's go.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Dion Cole, a.k.a. DJ Coleslaw. His Netflix special is called Cole Hearted. He's on Blackish and Grownish. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, that does it for this week on Press Play. Have a great weekend, if you can call it a weekend. We'll have a special music-themed show for you on Monday. I'll be back here live on Tuesday. See you then.